Star Trek, our favorite frontier. These are the podcasts of Aaron and Polly, their ongoing mission to explore all things Trek, to seek out cool things and pick them apart, to boldly complain as no one's complained before.
And this is Paul.
And we are back for Star Trek with Aaron and Polly. And I know, folks, you're out there going, hey, it's been two weeks or more since we've gotten a fresh Star Trek with Aaron and Polly. And here we are in the middle of Season 5, the last season of Star Trek Discovery. Where the heck are Aaron and Paul?
Well, we put as much effort into this podcast as they put into the writing of this final season. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Maybe more. Yeah, wow. No, spoilers.
Shots fired.
We're going to talk about... We're all caught up. We have three episodes to talk about today.
So this is spoilers, a special...
I only liked one.
A special three-hour episode of Star Trek.
Oh, no. No,
we talk about episodes 4, 5, and 6 today. But,
yeah. Oh, no, it's not. It's not. Yeah. Don't you worry.
So, you know, we've been talking about the Skybound possible acquisition of Paramount Plus.
Skydance. Skydance. Robert Kirkman is not buying Paramount.
We keep getting that wrong, or I keep getting that wrong. So Skydance. Okay.
Skydance.
So Skydance, this is what happens when you don't have your notes in front of you. the deal with Skydance apparently fell apart yesterday.
Yeah.
Apparently just completely fell apart. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. There was an exclusive window they had to close this deal. And apparently it is not going to happen. And then there was also a deal that Sony was looking to acquire Paramount. And the Paramount leadership has, you know, poo-pooed that because, you know, really what Sony was going to do was, you know, chop it up for parts. And it was just Paramount would just be a brand that they managed. And Paramount leadership was not interested in that. They're trying to retain the legacy of Paramount in whatever deal they arrange. So
I don't know what what is the legacy of Paramount anymore? Because Disney owns, you know, your indie.
Go ahead. You still have the lot, right? You know, the historic Paramount lot.
Yeah, that's
lot.
True.
And, I mean, just the entire back catalog and history of Paramount. You know, you've got a tremendous catalog of film there, you know, dating all the way back to, you know, the original Ben-Hur to the, you know, the Ben-Hur remake, you know, with
to the Ben-Hur TV series.
But I mean, you've got historic films like the first film, right? I mean, we are all the way back to the early, like, you know, before talkies, right, of film. And, you know, Paramount is really the only legacy studio left. You know, the other studios have sold off all their stuff. Even though you've got, you know, Fox over there under the Disney brand, it's not the same thing.
But I will say at least Disney is keeping the Fox brand alive.
True.
It is just a brand. Yeah. But I think for what it's worth, I would be shocked if Sony did something different with Paramount than that, right? I mean, having it as a brand, you know, keeping the iconic franchises alive and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure that was the plan. It was a $26 billion all cash offer that they, and I'm like, I don't think it's going to get better than that, frankly.
I don't know exactly what they're looking for. You know, I know that leadership is wanting to, you know, essentially continue to have a say in how it's managed while also still selling it off. And I'm like, you know, if you get the deal, you know, walk on.
Exactly. Start up your own thing. Yeah. Small like art shop or art house studio or something. It's going to be interesting to see where all that ends up the door is open. There's blood in the water. Paramount will definitely be acquired by someone within the next few years.
Yeah, no, it's and shareholders have gotten excited about the idea of such a deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once the shareholders start sniffing that, and maybe this is the blood in the water you're talking about, once they start sniffing it, you're going to have to do something.
Yeah, exactly. Because especially if deals like this are rejected by Paramount, that's going to hurt their stock, which will then devalue the studio, and the next offer will be even lower. And then, at some point, they'll have to sell.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, at this point, I think Paramount has so much value, not just in Star Trek, but, they also have the Yellowstone franchise for what that's worth anymore.
Really? There are Yellowstone branded canned beans. So, I mean, there's a lot of bean money out there to be made.
Yeah. And barbecue sauce and steak seasoning.
I'm amused at how much of the bean and condiment aisle is dedicated to the Yellowstone brand of products.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, a little preview of our upcoming podcast, Jellystone, with Aaron Paul.
The much promised.
a franchise that they just completely shit the bed on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious to see, not they meaning Paramount, they meaning Taylor Sheridan and the infighting have crippled that franchise. I hope that when they come back with a vengeance and bring it back to life, because I find that without Kevin Costner, of course, there's no interest.
Right.
It was already kind of, this season that they had started was already a little lackluster.
God, it was terrible.
Yeah.
It was so far outside the level of quality that had previously been established. I mean, this is bad.
Yeah. But for the top rated show on television to literally just stop mid season because the lead actor and the creator can't get along.
Right.
I mean, that is crippling for that franchise. And it did. I mean, they stopped production of that like a year and a half before the strikes.
Yeah. if it were me, I would just, have the Costner character die in a plane crash or something and double down on that show. And when I came back, I'd come back with 18 episodes, because I like Kevin Costner in that show. But I love the other characters.
Right? Agreed.
I frankly, just give me a fucking Rip show. All I need is Rip,
Yeah, I mean, and then all this talk about Matthew McConaughey entering the franchise, I mean, it's just gone dead. Dormant. I shouldn't say dead. Yeah. It's gone very dormant for quite a while. And, if they... you can kill that Kevin Costner character off screen. They did it in Succession. They can do it in Yellowstone. It can be done effectively.
Yeah. And that's what I would do. You just have, you find his hat floating on the river, that's all you got to do. And it just becomes now we're dedicated to protecting our father's legacy. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now there's blood in the water and the vultures are coming out to take over the ranch even more so. Exactly. And the family has to protect it. I mean, we can write the show. Taylor,
that's right. That's right.
Give us a buzz. We got this.
We can cast it as well.
Yeah. It's like, I want Cole Hauser to play every role.
And I've got a cowboy hat. I could be in it.
I'll
bring my own hat.
But the Texas cowboy hat rules are different than Montana cowboy hat.
Ah!
You know this.
I do. But, I just don't understand that. I don't understand, I feel like he was afraid to just pull the bandage off.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I would have done. I would just kill your character. You know?
And honestly, for what it's worth, they could have filmed every aspect of season five or whatever season we're on, other than the Kevin Costner bits.
Yeah.
Right. And then, filmed him in a vacuum, filmed his stuff on green screen, like whatever. He's the governor.
Yeah.
So it's we'll see. We'll see when that franchise comes back. I feel like the first thing we're going to get is the second season of 1923.
And I'm okay with that. I mean, I really enjoyed 1923.
Yeah, I did see more, but I want to see the Yellowstone story finished. Yeah, you know,
There are elements of the 1923, and I know why it is, why it's reminiscent for me, but it reminds me so much of young Indiana Jones, in that there's that whole World War One aspect to it, that early 20th century sort of thing, and I dig that, and it's, you know, just reminiscent of some of how cinematic young Indiana Jones was. Certainly not the same tone.
No.
But, you know, I bring that up because I have been listening to a podcast called The Young Indiana Jones Chroniclers.
What?
And it's hosted by Peter Holmstrom, who, and this is all Star Trek adjacent.
That's Paramount.
he is a writer, a TV writer, as well as a book writer. And he recently wrote the companion book to the Center Seat documentary series.
Hmm.
Anyway, it's a terrific, just deep dive podcast into the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And I mean, they're interviewing the directors, the actors, the writers, for the series. They're just really, exploring all the corners, because I think he's probably getting ready to write a book about it, and the podcast is his research. But if you have any kind of appreciation for young Indiana Jones, I highly recommend the Young Indiana Jones Chroniclers, because it is fantastic. I have burned through that show, and it's fairly new. It started like in November, I think, of last year, and I have burned through every episode. It is fantastic, Paul.
You know, so. Well, Young Indiana Jones is no longer available on Disney Plus, so I don't know if that's streaming anywhere anymore.
It is on Disney Plus. I watched it just last week. Seriously, I watched it last week.
Yeah, I literally just looked, and it's I just did a search for Young Indiana, and nothing pops up. And
that's alarming, because I was in the middle of watching that series.
You know, it could be one of those things that, you know, the rights expired on May 1st or something, and you know, they're now with a different. Yeah, I thought so too. So yeah. Maybe they rented streaming rights.
Yeah, but boy, I only watched a couple of episodes of that when it was on.
Same.
And you know, and largely because I wasn't really interested in the younger Indiana Jones, and those are the ones that I seem to catch. It's the older stuff that I'm interested in, like, you know, Indiana Jones versus the Vampires. I haven't watched that episode yet, but I'm excited for that episode. So more to come. But anyway, I'm going to have to go in there and make sure that my indie hasn't disappeared, because, you know, it is not available. They have not released it on Blu-ray. There's an old DVD release.
You can purchase
release.
It in standard definition on Amazon Prime.
Yay.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on just FYI, not seeing it on Disney Plus. But you'll have to let me know if it shows differently.
I will double check, because it was in my watch list, and God dang it, Disney Plus.
Anyway. That's how they get you. Aaron.
Are you ready to talk about some Star Trek? We're
talking about Star Trek today.
Kick this can down the street, I think, as far as we can, Paul.
Well, but, I mean, I think. Aaron, not to interrupt you.
Oh, dear. But you are. You're interrupting me. And I don't care for that. You. When I'm talking, Paul, you're listening.
I mean, if only that was true. No, I was going to say, I'm going to start the conversation on a positive note of these three episodes we're going to be discussing today.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Because are you going to tell me that you liked Face the Strange? Episode.
I liked Face the I didn't know that was the title. I don't like the title. but the episode itself, of the three episodes we're going to talk about, and I understand that this is a low bar to make, but it is by far the best of the three episodes. I thought
it is the most Star Trek of the three episodes. Yeah. It is
probably the best episode of the season so far.
I would have to agree. I enjoyed this episode a great deal, actually.
Same.
I thought that it was a nice pairing of both Burnham and Rayner. I liked seeing them having to work together. You know, it's what we really needed. This we needed Captain and Exo, right?
Yeah.
And you know, this episode puts them in a time loop. So if you'll recall, at the end of Janal, episode three, Adira comes back to the ship with an electronic device having been implanted on their jacket, right?
Yes.
While the crew was down on Trill. And, you know, I think it was Maul.
Yes. I don't remember which one's Maul and which one's
Locke. It was the lady one.
Yeah.
she put the bug on Adira's jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Adira comes back to Discovery, the bug comes off, and it turns out this is a time bug, Paul. And what the time bug does is pushes a ship through time back and forth, displacing them so as to, confound the crew, right? And so that's what happens. And Captain Burnham and Commander Raynor are not subject to the time looping.
Yes, they were mid-transport.
Right, when so all of this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, I guess, to use a Next Generation term, they're out of phase with the time jumping. So they're aware of what's happening, whereas the crew is not. And so they are able to affect change, but they keep getting reset, right? So, and the time intervals, change and lengthen, et cetera. They have to, accomplish their task within a certain amount of time. And fortunately, as was established in seasons past, Paul Stamets kind of has a time affinity. So Stamets also was outside of the time loop.
And yes,
so
his
sporiness.
Yeah, his sporiness.
Yeah. his affinity with the mushrooms.
Correct.
Allows him, with the mycelial network, allows him to step out. And I got to tell you, Paul, I loved all of this.
I thought
this
was,
And in fact, there is a scene between Stamets and Tignataro, Jet Reno.
Jet Reno.
Yeah. There is a scene between them where, he has jumped back in, to when Reno first joins the ship. And, she just looks at him and she's like, "Are you caught in a temporal time loop?" And he's like, "What? No, but me? Oh, that's crazy talk." And I mean, I just loved that whole, "Are you in a temporal time loop?" I loved, she is the perfect character to bust his balls about, time looping. And, she says, "Oh, I'm just messing with you." But there's that whole element like, maybe not really. Maybe she's not messing with him.
Yeah. I thought that scene was great. I love this entire, it's funny. I can actually say I love the episode. I thought there was the humor worked, the science of it, as it was, I don't want to say sound, it's science fiction, but it made sense, what they were saying. And I actually really love the concept of basically Dr. Manhattan, Paul Stamets.
Yeah.
Because, he's just like, he's despite the ship jumping all over through time, the fact that he's just like, he's him, I thought was very cool. The one complaint I would have is that in all these time jumps, there is a moment with Raynor and Jet, right? Mm-hmm. Jet Reno,
mm-hmm.
where, they have a moment, like a camaraderie moment, not like a romantic moment. And, she gives him a patch or something like that. Like there's, and he's like, "Yeah, maybe we can have it." Like, "I'll meet you in the bar," whatever. There was something, some comment like that. And I'm like, and then they never, and I understand that basically they undid, all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like as if those characters remember that moment, but I thought it would be interesting for Raynor to acknowledge that because, that episode was kind of all about his character progression and his acceptance of knowing the crew and the personal natures of the crew and things like that. And I thought it would have been cool to see him have a drink with Jet. But it's never brought back up in the two episodes following.
Yeah. Well, I very much enjoyed this episode. I thought it worked really well. It felt Star Trek. I loved being able to compare and contrast the how far Michael Burnham has come. You know, I mean, you know,
having the acknowledgement of, you know, when she showed up, you know, the old school Michael Burnham, you know, with the real angry face and
the prison haircut.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at Michael Burnham now, and she clearly spends a lot of time with her hairdresser versus Michael Burnham then, where, you know, she got her hair cut in prison. You know,
yeah. I
love the you know, just compare and contrast where the character is. I thought that was a lot of fun. And I appreciated, you know, that, you know, Burnham's kind of looking at herself across the years and is like, yikes.
Yeah, because it gives us that ability to as well.
Yeah.
You know, which was I thought was very cool.
What I thought was absent, you know, it's the same thing. It's like it feels like there should have been a jump to. I kept thinking, like, are we going to see Lorca?
They acknowledge him, but, you know,
they name drop, but, you know, they didn't spend the money to bring the actor in. And same thing with you know, Empress Georgiou. I kept expecting these major characters. I mean, couldn't there have also have been a Captain Pike moment? You know,
you've got all these actors. I mean, not Jason Isaacs.
I'm just thinking, you know, even though we got to see Michael Burnham, you know, first season Michael Burnham, we did not get to see, you know, what about Mary Shifo? I mean, there's just so many other major characters from before the 32nd century jump that we don't get to see, you know. And I feel like this was bottle show economics in the storytelling. It's like, you know, we're going to contain all the action to the ship sets, and we're not going to bring any additional actors in.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I'm saying it felt like bottle show economics. I'm like, come on, you know,
but it worked for me. Right. I mean,
I know it did, but I mean, it just would have been nice to have had the cameos. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want a clip show. I didn't want to see them, you know, interact with, you know, former footage, but it just would have been nice to see, you know, Captain Pike walk into the turbo lift at some point, or, you know, see him down the hall. But, you know, that just wasn't what they were about. And I thought the episode still worked. That was a minor frustration on my part. But I of these three episodes, and of the episodes I've seen so far this season, this is by far my favorite. Even though I really liked Janal, episode three, this one is by far my favorite. And I gotta say, Paul, I read an article this week that Owo and Detmer are only in five episodes this season.
And I think we've seen two of them, right?
Uh-huh.
At least.
Yeah. And I'm like, why is that? Well, I'm just blown away.
I'm sure it's cost savings, right? I wonder if that's part of it. If, you know, like, kind of like what's happening with Lois and Clark. Like, they knew this was going to be the... Well, they don't... And this is just kind of a complaint in general. You know, the episodic, I'm struggling a little bit with this episodic but also serialized nature of this season, in that, you know, each episode is basically the same story. Go to a new planet, get a piece of the puzzle.
Chase the thing.
Go to a new
planet. We're chasing the thing.
Yeah, just keep chasing the thing. And, you know, we're six episodes in, and it's even though the stories are different, because, you know, they're kind of going with this episodic of, like, new planet, new thing, new puzzle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also serialized in that it's this one continuous story, but it feels a little repetitive. And especially, you know, with with the two episodes after this, I could, like, for example, episode five, I could not be less interested. I really struggled with episode five to find a reason to finish the episode, because it's like, I know how this is going to end. They're going to get the piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Episode five is Mirrors. Yes. In which Book and Burnham chase Maul and Locke through a wormhole. And on the other side of the wormhole, they discover the ISS Enterprise from the Mirror Universe is trapped in this collapsing space. And that is where Maul and Locke have retreated to, and thus, you know, enabling the Star Trek folks to utilize an existing set from Strange New Worlds, and further, you know, bank the money, making this a bottle show. They didn't have to, you know, fork out more cash there. My frustration here is, as much as I like the actor who plays Book, I really am entirely bored with the book story. I really am much more interested in seeing one of our Starfleets join Burnham on these missions.
Yeah.
They have to go in and fly this really dicey mission. Why wouldn't you take Detmer? Detmer would be the person that I take flying a mission like that. Detmer has demonstrated her, you know, crazy skills at the helm. I just don't understand that. I know they keep wanting the book thing to happen, and you know we have closed out the relationship on their romance, and you know we're trying to put that strife in there so that maybe the romance rekindles. I was satisfied and done with the relationship. I don't need this. I don't think their chemistry is that great to warrant this. And frankly, I think it's taking up a lot of story real estate that the series just doesn't have.
Agreed. And I will say, so, well, we're not on episode 6 yet. However, I find, this is going to be a little weird for me to say.
Uh-huh.
I find that book has a lot of chemistry with the Doctor.
Yeah, with Culber.
Yeah. With Culber. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at one point, and yeah, we're going to get to this in episode 6, but you know, at one point, you know, they're having like dinner together, Mofongo together.
Yeah.
And you know, Culber's kind of talking about how he's trying to connect with Paul about his experience on his experiences in Janal, or his experience on the planet Trill, with Janal. And you know, Paul's so sciency, he's not quite getting it, Culber's talking to Book about it, and at one point Book's like, yeah, but that's okay, and what's the problem with that? And Culber's like, he's my partner though. And I was waiting for Book to go, but does he have to be? Because you know, they spend a lot of time together, and you know, it is probably all in my head.
The sexual chemistry between Book and Culber.
I'm shipping Bookber or Culbook. I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
That's hilarious. I was like,
these characters have the best chemistry of any two characters on the show. When they're on the screen together, I find that I'm like enthralled with the conversation, and I feel like I'm seeing friends talk to each other. Right. And I don't get that, you know, like to your point, I don't get any chemistry between Book and
Burnham. Yeah. Yeah. I don't get it. And I don't, you know, I feel like the writers are trying to solve for the Janeway problem. In Voyager, they never gave Janeway a long lasting romantic interest because, you know, 90s audiences weren't prepared to see, you know, a woman be dominant at work and having to be a partner in a romantic relationship. That just couldn't work. That she had to be chaste if she was going to be captain for some weird reason. The writers are trying to say, you know, women can have relationships and still be effective leaders. I don't disagree with that. I just don't enjoy the relationship between Book and Burnham. And Book is so outside Starfleet. You know, it just reminds me, this whole thing reminds me of a fan film in which, you know, the one guy doesn't want to wear a Star Trek uniform. You know, I've got this great leather trench coat. I'll wear that instead.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to wear a Star Trek uniform. I'll wear this thing that I own. I'll just bring it with me. That just drives me nuts because I like Star Trek, right? I like the command structure. I'm all about that. Burnham's use of Book prioritized over the use of her own highly effective and committed crew, drives me batshit. You know, it drives me crazy that she took him to, you know, through the wormhole to go, you know, chase after Maul and Locke. She takes him almost everywhere. I mean, it drives me nuts. And, you know, here we've got all these other really interesting characters that we're just not doing enough with. But Mirrors, Paul, Mirrors. I will say the one thing I enjoyed about this episode was getting to learn more about Maul and Locke, finding out that Maul, is a Breen, and that the guy character is Breen, and we get to see what Breens look like under their helmets for the first time ever. I thought all of that was fascinating. I think it's a little ridiculous to think that the Breen are going to hunt you down across the entire scope and width of the galaxy for, you know, a perceived slight. But that apparently is what we're going to hang our hat on in terms of why Maul and Locke are doing what they're doing. Because, you know, they want to get the progenitor power so that they can deal it back to the Breen to cancel this debt that they owe, you know, that has put them as marked individuals, and, you know, what do they call it, a blood hunt, death hunt, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So, yeah, it's a silly reason. It's a silly reason. Space, you know, I don't know if you know this, Star Trek writers, space is really big.
Yeah.
and, you know, up until yesterday, you didn't have warp drive. I mean, it just drives me nuts, Paul. So that was Mirrors. I did not care for Mirrors, but I did find some things there that I appreciated, like the Breen story.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, there wasn't enough meat on the bone. It felt like it didn't, again, it moved the story forward in that they got another piece of the puzzle, mm-hmm. but it just, I don't know. Like I said, I could not be less interested in it as a whole. I found, you know, the appearance of the ISS Enterprise, like, okay, cool, but they literally did nothing with it. It's just a set.
They were just using the set. That's all they
did. Yeah, it's like, okay, you don't introduce the ISS Enterprise literally just for no reason, but mm-hmm. they did. Yep. But they introduced it for no reason.
Yeah.
It was just, it felt so odd to me. And, you know, it to your point about, you know, bottle episodes, it the fact that they used the ISS Enterprise without any, and I understand we're 1,000 years in the future, mm-hmm. but without, like, but it was totally abandoned. it was like, oh, why? Like, you can't have brought anyone in, you know, picture, and a video.
You're not going to play a ship's log to find out what the hell happened to everybody. I mean, it's like, they apparently all got away. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so our last and final episode that we'll be discussing today is best title of the season, Whistle Speak. So here's my first gripe. They make a big deal about how the people of the planet they're visiting speak in whistles.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't. They talk a lot about, you know, listen, they speak in whistles and yada yada, and here looks, this is how it translates and yada yada, and then we do nothing else with it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was a whole lot of time wasted for something that you didn't really execute on. You know, I kept thinking that there was going to be a moment when Tilly and Burnham are on the planet with these people that we would, there'd almost be like that, you know, Hunt for Red October language transition moment, mm-hmm. you know, where, you know, Raimi is speaking Russian and then all of a sudden it's transitioned to English. I kept thinking that was going to happen, but no, there was
no one has done it as good as Hunt for Red October.
Yeah. And there was no artful transition. It was just all of a sudden there were no whistles, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, we're still hunting clues here in Whistle Speak, and this clue was left on the planet that we visit here by the Denobulans. And if you'll recall, the doctor in Star Trek Enterprise was Denobulan, but a race of Denobulans created these weather stations on this, you know, meteorologically hostile world. Mm-hmm. And these weather modification towers were disguised as, you know, stone pillars and mountains, so as not to disrupt the lives or violate the prime directive for this, you know, pre-war, pre-industrial society. Well, all of them but one have failed, the one that they need, but it is failing. And in order to access the inner depths of the, you know, weather tower, they have to qualify to do so by running a race. And so,
the
you know,
thirsty race, the thirsty games.
Yeah, exactly. The thirsty games. And the way you do that, Paul, the way you do that, the way you make sure that Starfleet wins is you send Tilly down for that race. Now, well,
you know, she was running on the bridge for a long time. You know, that they remember when she was in cadet or, you know, whatever.
I do. Yeah. She ran across the Discovery, but I'm just saying, Paul, you run marathons.
Yes.
You know, you run, you know, the various races. I don't know what kind of odds would you lay down for? Yeah, I let me just go on record. I am a person of size as well as Lieutenant Tilly. I would not, you know, put my odds high at winning the thirsty race. One, because I like to not be thirsty, and two, because you know, as a larger fella, I have bad knees. I don't see me winning a race, and I just thought it was.
But she won.
This is what we call science fiction. I'm just like, come on. Come on.
And there's so much. Everything about this episode was bad, except the sexual tension between Book and Culber. Other than their scenes together, everything about this episode was bad. The thirsty games was silly. And then, you know, they go into the sacrificial chamber. And, you know, they don't realize it's a sacrificial chamber because, you know, just like us, they don't research before they hop on the mics.
That's right.
You know, so they're like, oh, we won this race. You're going to kill us now.
Yeah.
Did not realize that. Sorry.
Isn't that how your races work, Paul?
it feels that way sometimes. But, you know, then, you know, Tilly's in. So Burnham hears, as if the episode wasn't already boring and ridiculous to me, because I was like, you know, I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, when they go on these backwater super religious planets, it just kind of reeks of Star Trek. What's the
Star Trek 5?
Star Trek 5 or Star Trek. I'm thinking 9. Not 9. The one before Nemesis. Insurrection?
Yeah. Insurrection.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's when they go onto these, like, less technical planets and it's just, like, people in robes. I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
So it was already, like, not working for me. And then they break. And then because Tilly's in this sacrificial chamber, Burnham has to break the Prime Directive in order to save her. She has to reveal herself to one of the citizens on the planet by teleporting in. And there's Raynor acknowledges it, but everyone does it anyway without real question. There's an acknowledgement about all the paperwork that they have to fill out in relation to it. But I'm like, I feel like there should have been more of
conflict. Yeah.
And there should have been consequences.
Yeah.
And then she literally doubles down. Like, she could just pour it in and say, yes, I'm one of your gods. You have to release them. I'm going to, you know, the reins. But she doubles down. She reveals the ship. She reveals the doctor. She reveals, you know, holograms and tells the guy everything. I'm like, I don't know that you need to go that far down the rabbit hole of breaking the Prime Directive. I feel like you could break it a little bit.
Yeah.
But you broke it a lot of it. And then it's really just thrown away as a joke. And I'm sure it's never actually going to be, you know, I mean, with only 4 episodes left in the series, I can't imagine they're going to be like, you know, court-martialing her for breaking the Prime Directive. It's just, it felt like such, and I don't get me wrong, I know it's Star Trek. I know they've broken it 1,000 times. It just felt like it's called the Prime Directive, as in primary.
There was a moment there where I thought Raynor was going to balk. You know, because he does point at it and said, you know, hey, this is a Prime Directive issue, yada yada, and she's like, yeah, I don't care, do it anyway. And he's like, okay, but for a moment, I thought he was going to, no, we've got the Prime Directive for a reason, you know,
or someone. You would think someone, but you know, and we've kind of talked about this in relation to Discovery before, is that there's no rules on that ship, right? There are no rules.
But I think Raynor had some nice moments, like particularly working with Adira in this episode. I really felt like that was working out, you know, because, you know, it at the beginning of the episode, it's Burnham walks on the bridge, goes, oh, Adira, good to see you on the bridge. And, you know, she's Raynor says, well, you know, they had asked for bridge time. And Adira's like, I didn't mean today. And I actually laughed at that. I was like, oh, that's great. You know, no time like the present. And I liked, I liked his the way he worked with the character. At the beginning of this episode, as we're learning about the planet we're visiting, one of the comments that's made is that they recognize three genders. And I was kind of amused when, the medical team beams in to the tower, you know, to help out, I forget the
Rama or something like that.
Something like Raina, maybe. I don't know. It's too close to Rainer. But the character's pronoun is they, right?
Yes.
And, you know, so later in the episode, Culber comes back and says, you know, they'll be waking up soon. You know, he was able to revive the character. And I just, I kind of had this image in my head of Culber and team, you know, materializing next to, the fallen, person and your pronouns, tell me your pronouns, you know, because how do you know?
Yeah, how do they know? Yeah.
I was
the character was unconscious.
Yeah, I was just very amused by that. Yeah, I felt it was very pronounced in this episode when we were on the ship, and this is something that's just driving me crazy. And I've mentioned it before, but it really jumped out at me in this episode how we don't walk to another room, we beam to the other room.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with the ship and the spore drive. We don't warp somewhere anymore. We spore drive. So everything's just pop, pop, pop. And so when they don't, when there'll be a scene like, I think it was the previous episode, where Rainer's like, a moment, Captain, and they walk into the ready room. I'm like, wow, why didn't they beam? You know, what's going on? You know, I really hate how we don't walk places, how we beam down to the planet from whatever room we're in. We don't go to the transporter room. You know, they have that set, for crying out loud. I don't know why we don't use it. I guess where I'm going with this is a couple of things. One, I think they are trying to expedite story, but why? The stories they're telling are not that deep that it would kill you to transition, you know, via walking. And I think there is an added issue here. You know, let's take a meta step back for a moment. There is a real problem with Star Trek in that there is no merchandising. The things people like to buy in Star Trek are phasers, and they like to buy tricorders, and they like to buy the things people touch in Star Trek. Well, you know, they've turned the tricorders into contact lenses, right? The hollow lenses or whatever they're calling them. And I'm like, you guys are idiots. People want to touch the tricorder, right? There is a reason why the merchandise that sells for Star Trek is the original series and Star Trek The Next Generation. There is almost nothing out there, you know, other than t-shirts available for Discovery, because they've not created tactile things people can touch. And I'm like, you guys aren't thinking about, and I don't want them to be fully focused on merchandise, but I do want it to be successful. And one of the ways you make your science fiction franchise successful is by creating merch. And they're just not doing that. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah. So it's and you know, how many thousands of dollars do they spend every time they, you know, have to do the special effect of them teleporting from room to room instead of just walking?
Yeah.
You know, it's
I hate feels, it. I
yeah, really I'm not a fan it. Of it.
Yeah. I hate it.
It feels very Wall-E to me. You know, it feels very lazy.
It does feel lazy. It feels extremely lazy. So,
So
we get the next clue. We end the episode that, we know where Maul and Locke are. And I saw the preview for next week, and apparently Maul and Locke are captured. So I have to say, of these three episodes, like Paul, Face the Strange is the episode that I really enjoyed, and the other two were kind of slogs for me to get through.
Agreed. I didn't have as much of an issue on the third episode getting through it, but I definitely did with that, with episode five.
Yeah. Mirrors.
Mirrors.
Yeah.
But four more to go.
I And I'd like to point out that Star Trek Discovery chose not to defy my expectations. I had hoped that they would solve the puzzle by mid-season, and then we would deal with consequences in the remaining episodes. But here we are, you know, we have finished episode 6, right? So we're coming into 7, 8, 9, 10.
And I believe there are two more two more pieces?
Yeah. So, you know, we have not defied expectations. We're going to carry this all the way up to the stinking end. It's really unfortunate. I don't feel like we're going to get to live any deeper with some of these characters. I think we're gonna stick with the same handful, and that's got to be super frustrating to have your role minimized as it's been. And I'm talking specifically about Owo and Detmer, which are just characters that I love, and I fear that we're never going to see them again once Discovery ends. I hate that. I just want to see more about them. And, you know, I understand that the reason why Jet Reno is pushed to the corners is because Tignataro has some special requirements about when and who she can be on set with. But, you know, particularly in the COVID emergency, but I think she's still got some lingering health stuff, which is why we don't see a lot of her. But, you know, every time she's on screen, she's golden. Yeah. I really enjoy the writing for her and her performance. There are characters on this show that we just don't get to see enough. And, you know, frankly, there are characters on the show that I'm seeing too much of. And the only bright shining light in terms of character this season is Commander Raynor. You know, Callum Keith.
Yeah, every time they bring in a new captain, it's gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Callum Keith Rennie is great. I like him. I like him a lot. You know, I love that piece of his ear that's chewed off. I mean, I just think that's great. I got a real kick out of him, and I still predict that there is a mutiny in him. and I'm kind of shipping for that, Paul. There is this part of me that wants to see him and Burnham go head to head. You know, even though I enjoy the two of them working together, and I also really need to see Burnham taking the ship Raynor taking the ship into battle. I really want to see him sitting at the captain's chair and just unloading photons on a bad guy.
Oh, so we've got 4 episodes. We'll see.
I hope that happens. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought of these 3 episodes of Star Trek Discovery. What's driving you crazy? What you're liking and what you're hoping happens in the remaining episodes? Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on a future episode, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
And I would like to pimp something we just released to the feed this week, our special Phantom Menace retrospective in Star Wars with Aaron and Polly. Check that out. It's got me, Paul, and Andrew, everyone's favorite Andrew, chatting about our Phantom Menace memories and looking back and remarking on what we think of Phantom Menace today. So it's a lot of fun. Check it out. I think you'll enjoy it.
Whose favorite is Andrew?
Apparently my wife's. I'm just saying. Because she's actually met you, Paul.
Well, yeah, that's true.
All right, guys, y'all have a good one.
Bye.
Bye. Star Trek with Aaron and Polly is a production of IOMGeek.com. Have a question or comment? Hailing frequencies are open at 972-763-5903. Tribble wrangling provided by Triskelion Trays, no troublesome tribbles. Mr. Aponte's wardrobe provided courtesy of Garrick's Clothiers, conveniently located on the promenade.